In Spoken from the Heart, Laura Bush writes evocatively of her childhood in Midland, a place of endless skies and stinging sandstorms. Though she lived for 6 years in the governor's mansion and another 8 in the White House, it was the time she spent on the high plains of West Texas that made her who she is today. Midland was where she found friends that would last a lifetime and met an aspiring politician named George W. Bush. I visited with Mrs. Bush in the library of her home in Dallas.
This is a very lovely home. And actually, this room is quite nice, I was just saying. It's a wonderful room.
It was a real selling point when I came to look at the house. The guy we bought the house from had a great collection of new first editions. And so he'd have a section of books, all, you know, the jackets covered in the Mylar covers. And then next to it would be a little snapshot of him with Larry McMurtry or him with John Updike. I think he's active in the Arts and Letters Live in Dallas. So he would go hear him read and get a picture.
And now Dallas, obviously, both then and now, and even before then, with family connections, has been an important city for you. But when you left Washington, the first place you went to was Midland.
We went back home to Midland for the very first day. The flew low over Midland, so the 30,000 people that had congregated in downtown Midland could see it, and then we rode in a motorcade from the airport back to downtown. And that's what we had done when we left Texas. We had stopped on our way to Washington in Midland, because Midland was our childhood home, both of us. Mm-hmm. George moved to Midland when he was 4 and left when he was in the 8th grade. And so really, we have a lot of the same friends from those years, even though we went to 2 different elementary schools. So it was great to be home and to be in Midland. And we got there just as the sun set. We could see how beautiful the sky is at home in Texas.
You're from a very unique place. Can you just describe, for somebody who's encountering it for the first time, what it feels like to be in this place?
Well, Midland is perfectly flat and very few trees. In fact, there are really no native trees. When I was little, Midland was really during the middle of a dust bowl. It was a long time drought in the early part of the 50s. And, you know, it's a really sort of hard scrabble life in Midland. Mm-hmm. That's what the landscape is like. But the sky is magnificent. Hmm. And the view of the sky is never obscured because there aren't any trees. And one of the things my mother liked to do, and my mother had grown up in far West Texas in El Paso, so she knew that great West Texas sky, was lie on the ground in the summer on blankets and look up at the stars. I remember that.
You would identify constellations?
She'd point out constellations, of course, mainly the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper, the easiest ones to find.
That's great. Now, the driving culture was so important in Midland. How old did kids learn to drive out there?
Well, we got our driver's license when we were 14, on our 14th birthday. That was the law in Texas then. And of course, we started driving before that with driver's ed, and we drove every once in a while at 12 and then at 13, and then got our driver's license in 14. And that was really what we did. That's what we did on dates. You drove around at night. You might go to the drive-in movie. You would definitely go to Agnes, the drive-in, where you would get a Coke, or some of the other drive-ins that were in Midland, A&W Root Beer and Mr. X and the Rendezvous. Those were the drive-ins.
And so Agnes's was the main one.
That was the main one.
So what was the scene on like a Friday or a Saturday night?
Well, the scene on Friday or Saturday night would be a lot of cars parked in the front of Agnes for a long time. You'd stay there for a long time. You'd order a Coke, but you'd, you know, stay there longer than that. So we didn't eat out. We didn't order hamburgers. I mean, we ate at home.
You mentioned earlier how so many of these friends are still very close friends of yours. You had a real cohort out there. What were some of the kind of, you know, innocent escapades that y'all got into?
Well, we'd like to sneak out of our houses, especially at slumber parties, and walk around Midland in probably in our pajamas.
Just up on the sidewalk.
Just on the sidewalk.
Middle of the night.
Just in the middle of the night, walk around. It probably wasn't even the middle of the night. It was probably 11 or something, but that was really late for us. And that was what we thought was pretty wild to do, and that was the sneaking out, not telling the parents. Boys would come stand at our windows and talk through the windows in the middle of the night, but I didn't ever sneak out with any of the boys out the window. There might have been some girls that did that.
Possibly.
I think one of the things about growing up in Midland, at least for my friends, was that we felt like we were totally free to do anything we wanted. We could walk all over town. We could ride our bicycles. But there was a lot of security of knowing people your whole life that right. you started first grade with and still, you know, graduated from high school with. For George and me, because he also went to school there until the seventh grade. So a lot of our closest friends, even today, were our friends in elementary school, boys that he played Little League with. And there's great security in having that kind of a history with your friends. As George used to say, his Midland friends would come to the Oval Office and they'd say, God, I can't believe I'm here. And then they'd look at him. So, you know, you couldn't get too big of a head about having right. any kind of elected office because you had all those friends that would remind you.
I want to ask you a little bit about the night that this idyllic childhood kind of came mm-hmm. to an end for you in a way. Of course, that's the night of November 6th, 1963.
Well, you know, it was a really terrible thing that happened. I was driving with a friend who's still a friend today that I still see at high school reunions too. And like a lot of other 17-year-olds, I had just turned 17 2 days before. We had not looked at the newspaper to see what was on at the drive-in movies. We were just going to drive around and look at the movies and then decide which one to go to. And so we went, drove out north, and then got on a loop around Midland, which at the time was a country road, a two-lane country road, and drove to a point where Big Spring Street, this highway to Lubbock, runs into it. And just as we got there, she said, there's a stop sign that I didn't see. And I couldn't stop. Another car was coming. And, you know, it was a terrible crash and a terrible accident. And I was thrown from the car. And she wasn't. She just got out. But we were both unhurt. But we knew that the other person who was in the car didn't get up and was obviously thrown out of the car. And in a few minutes, a man drove up. And she said, I think that is that person's father. And I said, well, you know, I don't think so. That's Mr. Douglas. And it was Mike Douglas's father. And Mike Douglas, who was killed in the car accident, was one of my longtime best friends. He was a very close friend of mine. And it was a tragic, terrible, terrible accident that did in many ways bring to an end that feeling of security that I'd had before that.
You write about in the book how so many people came to talk to your parents mm-hmm. in the aftermath of this accident, but that nobody really talked to you, not even your mom and dad. How'd you carry that burden all by yourself?
Well, I think that's just sort of how the times were and how West Texas was, where, you know, and plus I felt really terribly guilty and ashamed. And there, you know, so I didn't really want to talk about it with anyone. I'm sure our minister came to the house, and I don't really remember that, but I'm sure he must have invested with me and mother and daddy.
And you were unable to go to the funeral or
didn't go to the funeral, and then I never went to speak to the Douglases, which now in retrospect I can't believe either. But no one encouraged me to. No one said, I think you should do this, and, you know, my parents did. And I think they probably thought, like I did, that you know, that the Douglases wouldn't really want to see me. And in a lot of ways, I guess they thought they were protecting me from it. But, you know, that's something I feel really bad about because, of course, it ruined their life. You know, there's no way to get over that kind of loss. And I know it did. I mean, I know that they were sad for the rest of their lives and you know, their heart was broken.
The incident caused her to lose her faith for a long time. And until this week, with the publication of her memoir, she has never spoken about it publicly. You can learn more about Laura Bush's life in Midland and in the White House in the next issue of Texas Monthly, and in our special report with KUT, Where I'm From. It airs June 4th at 3 p.m. on KUT 90.5. I'm Jake Silverstein.